I'm Michael Lippin, and this is Voice of America's VOA China 360, a weekly podcast looking at how China influences the rest of the world, including America, and how China is influenced by the world. This week, Beijing uses a legal weapon against pro-independence forces in its autonomous region of Hong Kong, and attracts criticism from Washington. China's top legislative body issued a November 7th ruling that elected Hong Kong lawmakers who do not swear an oath of allegiance to China sincerely must be disqualified from office. Hong Kong's High Court had been considering whether to allow two election-winning pro-independence activists to retake their oaths after they were invalidated for using derogatory language about China the first time last month. Hong Kong's leader, a Beijing loyalist, had petitioned the court not to give the two activists a second chance, and on November 15th, the court agreed, disqualifying both of the prospective legislators. It was an unprecedented move, consistent with the November 7th interpretation of Hong Kong's constitution or basic law by the National People's Congress Standing Committee. The Basic Law has promised Hong Kong a high degree of autonomy within China under a one-country, two-systems formula since colonial power Britain handed over sovereignty in 1997. Beijing's latest interpretation of the Basic Law on the issue of oath-taking drew this response from U.S. State Department spokesman Mark Toner.
We are disappointed by recent developments related to the Hong Kong Legislative Council. We urge the Chinese and Hong Kong Special Administrative Region, governments, and all elected politicians in Hong Kong to refrain from any actions that fuel concerns to or undermine confidence in the one country, two systems principle.
After the two legislators-elect were disqualified on November 15th, State Department spokeswoman Elizabeth Trudeau said she was aware of the news and repeated Toner's earlier statement almost verbatim. Those responses appear to follow a pattern for the Obama administration. In recent years, it's expressed concern about Hong Kong's political disputes and social unrest, while also not taking sides between the territory's opposing pro-Beijing and pro-democracy factions. Why does the U.S. seem to once again be restraining its criticism of Beijing's handling of Hong Kong? I put that question to Richard Bush, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington.
Neither you nor I know what was said in private diplomatically. And, you know, it is possible to say one thing that's a little bit vague in public, but be quite explicit and direct behind closed doors. And that may have happened in this case. And that way, at least talking to people in the Hong Kong government or the Chinese government, you can be pretty clear about what you mean.
Previous expressions of U.S. concern about Hong Kong related to its 2014 pro-democracy protests known as the Umbrella Movement. Robert Daly, director of the Washington-based Kissinger Institute on China and the United States, says Beijing's response to the Umbrella protests could be another consideration behind the latest U.S. statement.
I interpret that in part as the United States being very careful not to open itself up to being portrayed by mainland China as trying to manipulate the situation. There is a lot of awareness that this was something that was claimed by China in connection with the 2014 Umbrella Movement that Americans had been inciting through NGOs or directly. And that is something that the Beijing government is very quick to use, not only against the United States, but more importantly, against actors in Hong Kong or in Taiwan. So I see the vagueness of that statement in part as recognizing the complexity of the situation and recognizing that while Beijing's actions the United States sees as having been ill-informed and counterproductive are not strictly speaking illegal. They may be acting unwisely, but they are not technically acting outside of their jurisdiction. And the United States does not want to give Beijing a club with which to beat people in Hong Kong, namely saying that they are the tools of the United States.
Daly actually visited Hong Kong for several days earlier this month. He says he got the impression that Beijing's legal action against the two Hong Kong independence activists was more drastic than it needed to be.
In my brief experience there, I think that a lot of people in Hong Kong, even thoughtful people who are very concerned that Hong Kong keep its political and social freedoms, actually are not very supportive of Yao Wai-Ching and Sixtus Leung. They are seen as naive, as young, as somewhat self-serving in all of this. And so my own sense is that the people of Hong Kong are not anywhere close to rallying behind a cry for independence, and that therefore Beijing might have been better advised to let Hong Kong forces deal with this question in Hong Kong's own manner, both as a question of public opinion as well as a legal question. I think that Beijing is probably overly worried or even paranoid about this. But that kind of worry and that kind of assertion of sovereignty and desire to remind people that Beijing and Beijing alone ultimately is going to be the arbiter of what is sincere and what is good for Hong Kong, that kind of move is consistent with Xi Jinping's general mode of governance, and from that point of view shouldn't be terribly surprising.
Beijing does not describe itself as paranoid, obviously. The head of the Chinese government's Hong Kong liaison office, Zhang Xiaoming, defended its ruling in the oath-taking dispute as necessary to stop what he called the endless trouble that comes with calls for secession. For Richard Bush of Brookings, that intervention is part of a worrying trend.
I have seen at least a few actions, and this interpretation is the most recent one, that suggests that Beijing is sorry that it allowed Hong Kong to have a full rule of law system, and that it is now trying to constrain that. It's trying to constrain freedom of speech by interpreting speech as conduct. So specifically, talking about Hong Kong independence might be interpreted to be an act in favor of Hong Kong independence and therefore seditious. So I think this situation is very serious, and that we may be seeing some key pillars of the foundation of Hong Kong and the one country, two systems being eroded as we speak.
But Bush says the two pro-independence activists also share responsibility for their predicament by having used their swearing-in to make political statements against the People's Republic of China, or PRC.
My reaction is, whatever you feel and whatever your goals might be, is this a practical way to improve Hong Kong's autonomy vis-a-vis the mainland? Or does this kind of speech invite even more of the PRC's actions and policies that will constrain Hong Kong? You know, these people were elected to represent voters. And how are they doing their job by creating provocations? It seemed to be pretty deliberate provocations against the sovereign government.
Yao and Leung have expressed no remorse for their actions at the swearing-in, and now say they will appeal their disqualification to Hong Kong's Court of Final Appeal. But they have little sympathy from Daly, whose Kissinger Institute is part of a U.S. government-run research center.
As one who's been called on to swear to, you know, uphold the Constitution, that's a fairly sacred duty, and the oath that they were asked to take doesn't commit them to violating any of their own beliefs. And so, you know, my own view when I read about this was that, you know, this is often, and obviously highly cognizant of sounding like an old fogey in saying this, this is the kind of thing that idealistic, angry younger people tend to do. I think that their oath probably should not have been accepted. I think it was legitimate to, you know, give them another opportunity, perhaps, to repeat the oath as it was supposed to be administered, a second opportunity, a little bit of leniency, I think perhaps would have kept this from, you know, blowing out of proportion in the way that it has. But I don't think that they should simply have taken obscenities or insulting oaths at face value. You can't make light of the oaths or make of them whatever you want to.
At some point early next year, Hong Kong will have to hold by-elections to fill the two newly vacant seats in Hong Kong's Legislative Council, or LegCo. And then it becomes an issue for the next U.S. administration of Donald Trump to deal with. What can we expect from a President Trump on Hong Kong? Here's Robert Daly.
In the very sparse amount of writing and speeches on U.S.-China relations under Trump, I have not seen anything about Hong Kong one way or the other. So there's no reason to have an opinion about that one way or the other at this point, as far as I can see.
Richard Bush hopes for continuity in U.S. policy.
I actually think that the U.S. government, whoever's in charge, should raise the salience of the Hong Kong issue in our interactions with China and indicate that we're watching the situation very carefully and treating it very seriously.
How do you think the incoming Trump administration will handle the ongoing political turmoil in Hong Kong? Share your opinions on Twitter at VOAChina360 and on my Facebook journalist page, which is under my name, Michael Lippin, as well as on YouTube at youtube.com/mlippin and on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/VOA-English. I also invite you to listen to this podcast on iTunes. Just do a search for VOA China 360 and subscribe. That's it for me for this time. I'll be back next week with another VOA China 360.